Welcome to Teaming Up Conversations, the podcast. I'm your host, Simon Vetter. I believe that one of the most satisfying and rewarding moments in life is belonging to a trusted team and achieving something unique together. Thank you for joining our dialogue, how to build, lead, and be part of an inspired team and community. How do we deal with adversity and even thrive in the face of challenges? My guest and longtime friend, Anne Bowers Evangelista, is an expert in endurance leadership. I'm enthusiastic about the discussion with Anne because we cover so many important topics like mindset, mental toughness and discipline, importance of visualization, recognize negative self-talk and cognitive reframing, or harness the power of encouragement. What I'm most impressed about Anne is that she has tested and applied all the knowledge and expertise in her own life, including as a triathlon athlete and endurance runner. Trained as a licensed psychologist, Anne's passion is to ignite purpose, clarity, and exceptional leadership in families, teams, organizations, and communities. Have fun and enjoy the Teaming Up conversation with Anne Bowers Evangelista. Hello, Anne. So great being with you today.
Hello, Simon. It's always great to be with you. I'm happy to be here.
So we're going to talk about endurance leadership, a fascinating topic. I'm personally very interested. Can you give us a little bit of background how you came to be inspired and motivated by this topic of endurance and leadership?
Yeah. Really, it goes back to my own personal experiences, which I think is what happens for most of us. You know, we find some connection in with some element of the work that we're doing, and an idea sparks or a concept that maybe you hadn't thought of in a certain way. And for me, it probably goes back at least 10 to 15 years, actually, when I first started doing triathlon. My first triathlon was in 2002, which was 19 years ago, but it really started to take shape a little bit more, I would say, in the past 6 to 7 years. And I have an incident we can talk about that the reflection on that for me personally started really making some connections between my experiences and what I was seeing and some of the people I was consulting with, primarily with coaching. And what I started to see was that people that I knew and was seeing being successful over decades had some of the same qualities of thinking and of drive and of commitment and of support that I saw in myself and in the other endurance athletes that I was around. And so I started thinking about that a little bit more. And then I said, well, let me figure out if this has any legs. So I reached out to people that I knew and trusted like you and asked for some folks to interview and talk to some people, both endurance athletes and people that I describe as endurance leaders. And lo and behold, I was hearing some of the same concepts. So that's really where it got started.
We'll get into some of those traits and concepts. I'm not doing triathlon. And I don't have interest in doing it. I like biking, mountain biking. What is it that fascinates you? What do you enjoy about doing a triathlon? I mean, it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And my favorite distance for doing triathlon is actually the half Ironman distance. So, you know, a full Ironman is a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike ride and a 26.2 mile run and full marathon. So a half is half of those distances, 1.2 mile swim, 56 mile bike and a half marathon. And it is a lot of work to train for a race of that magnitude. So yeah, I better like something about it. And one thing I learned a long time ago is that the medal at the end was not enough. That will not sustain you. Just like a little bling at the end of a big long project at work is not what's going to sustain you over the long haul. So what I really like about it is there's a lot of diversity of the experience. I like running, but I don't want to just run. I like biking. I don't want to just bike. And I like swimming and I like doing other things too. But it was a way of combining these things that felt like, well, I can do each of those things in this measure and it won't kill me, especially when I started and I was doing kind of shorter distances. I also really like the multifaceted discipline that it takes. You know me, and I am someone who is probably identified as being relatively disciplined, particularly around my health and wellness. And the structure of it, the planfulness of working towards this very specific goal is really exciting to me. But ultimately, I have to say that the thing that has been most motivating and goes right back to the initial parts of my model is that I started doing triathlon to raise money for needy causes. So I did one, I hated it. I swore I was never going to do another. And then a few years later, I got involved with a group called Team in Training. And Team in Training is a fundraising arm of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Pardon me, there's a train going by. They essentially help people learn how to do distance events, running, marathons, long distance bike rides, triathlons. And they take you from nothing to completing this event. And in the service of that, you raise money for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So I got engaged around triathlon with Team in Training in 2005. And that's what really hooked me. It was suddenly this effort had a deeper purpose. It had way more meaning to me. And it was so fundamentally different than the first one I had ever done that felt like, okay, I did this thing and so what? This had a big so what. It was not only the goal of raising money, it was also a camaraderie. There were 26 or 30 people that we trained together for months, several times a week. So even though it's an individual sport, I've tended to really get a lot of energy around it when I am in some ways competing with other people. Mm-hmm. It's not against them, but really helping each other stay accountable, stay motivated, stay excited, and toward a greater cause.
So what are the qualities of a person that demonstrates endurance in sports, in triathlon, even in business?
You know, it's interesting, Simon, because I've really had to think about what does endurance mean? And the word endurance, if you look it up, the Webster Dictionary is going to say something like the ability to withstand adversity. It isn't a concept most people like to think about. To endure something sounds hard. My goal is to kind of reclaim the word as being a strength, being something that is more than just enduring something hard. It's really about thriving in the face of challenge. So I would define an endurance athlete as someone who has the ability to produce high levels of performance over a sustained period of time. So while that would include traditional people like your friend Danielle Reif, who is a legend in the sport of Ironman, it also would be somebody like Tiger Woods or mm-hmm. LeBron James. In many people's minds, they don't think of them as endurance athletes because they're not doing what's kind of classified as endurance sports. But the sports they're doing for decades. I also don't think of it as elite athletes, because I am certainly not an elite athlete. I think it's more about people who might be able to produce high levels of performance for themselves. And again, I think this is a differentiator in the way that I use and think about endurance leadership. So bringing it back to endurance leaders, the same principles applying. Leaders who are able to produce high levels of performance over a sustained period of time. It doesn't mean that every single day they knock it out of the park, but over decades, they are continually getting better and better and better. And they may not be world famous I think of Richard Branson is a very famous endurance leader who's been leading Virgin Records since 1973. Bernard Arnault has been leading LVMH since 1989. These are famous people, but an endurance leader might be like the equivalent of me, somebody that you know, we can think of lots of leaders that we've seen kind of quietly delivering high levels of performance for decades at a time. So that's how I define it. You could look up the words endurance leader and you will not find them in a dictionary anywhere. I just kind of made it up. So
I like the definition because it's broad, that applies to a lot of different fields.
And it also, in many ways, I think of what is high performance. High performance has so much to do with the situation. It's a multivariate definition or outcome. It really has so much to do with a number of factors that define whether or not that's high performance. So what might be high performance for one type of leader in one type of situation might not be the same as high performance for another leader in that type of situation. So we want to get objectively high performance. We don't want to be like, well, I think I'm high performing, so my organization should think so. But what does high performance mean at Morgan Stanley versus what does it mean at a startup technology company might look really different.
In sports, you have clear standards, what it means to win and lose, especially in team sports. In business, that definition is depending on the people who are running the organization. How do you define winning? What does success look like for our organization? And sometimes it's very heavily focused on financials. Sometimes it's on customer success, innovation. Could be on satisfaction of their employees.
Absolutely.
I really like the balanced scorecard approach where you look at different factors to define success and winning.
I'd love to hear what you think about this. Sorry to interrupt, but I feel like right now organizations are really having to take a very good hard look at what those definitions are and how they are incenting and promoting high performance. And that's part of why the model has really risen in terms of its urgency to me, because I feel like I'm seeing a lot of leaders, and not everyone that I'm talking to about endurance leadership have 30 years of experience. Some are young people saying, gosh, I'm looking out and I'm recognizing that there's a lot of burnout out there. There's a lot of people who are feeling like they're exhausted or they can't continue to deliver at these levels of performance over this period of time. How am I going to define high performance for me? What does it mean organizationally? But what does it also mean for me across my lifespan? And that might have to do with my business objectives. It might have to do with my personal objectives, my family, my community. All of those things might go into how I define high performance. So what is my balanced scorecard? And it may or may not align with what the organizational balanced scorecard is. But at the end of the day, if I'm not meeting my own needs, there's a likelihood that I'm going to burn myself out. I'm going to go out too hard. I'm going to lose my energy stores. I'm going to get injured, metaphorically injured. So I think organizations too are taking a good look at this. What do you think?
It's such an important question that oftentimes is not heavily discussed and agreed upon. What does success look like for our company? It's usually driven by the CEO who wants to deliver financial results, assuming that, yes, let's make sure we deliver financial performance and people are taken care of, but it's not defined. What does that look like and what are the measures for that? I do an exercise for myself and my clients to really define what does a successful year or successful period look like. Start with the end in mind and then look back and say, okay, good. What does a successful, satisfying year look like? And then define that in different parts of life, from health to relationships to family to business.
And yeah, I agree. In fact, one of the things I do when I'm coaching using this model is to really push people even further. And that's part of where I start around their mindset, which is to say, what's your ultimate mission? I ask questions like, what are you uniquely on the planet to do? What if if you don't do it, it won't get done. And that could mean everything. For most people, that drives some really, really important internal drivers. Those definitions have to do with how they want their family to see them, how they want to be known in their community. Very few people that I talk to say, I want to be known as, you know, I drove the best corporate results. That's not what they want to be known for or have put on their headstone. And then based on that, how do we work backwards into our shorter term objectives or our 3 to 5 year plan, and then working that back into a year or 2 year plan. So taking this longitudinal view is very far off for many people, but by thinking of having that kind of secured in the back of my brain, I kind of always can be thinking about, am I following towards my true north, towards that place I eventually want to be? Otherwise, I think it's really easy to get off track. I totally agree. And I know you well enough to know your goals for those things you talked about, health and family, go way further than just 1 year. Those are long-term commitments.
You mentioned mindset. Question, how did you train your mindset to train for a triathlon, the first one or the one you did? And then the follow-up is, how do we develop and shape mindset?
Great question. And I would love to say I have all the lock on the answers, and I don't. It's a continually evolving experience. What I will say for myself, particularly around triathlon, and I think I can make the same leaps even in my own business. If we think metaphorically that I have my own independent consulting business, and I didn't always, and at some point I had to start. So I think about concepts like starting small. I got talked into my first triathlon. Someone at the gym was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. You could do it. I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. And then I was like, well, I can swim kind of, and I can ride a bike, I think, and I run a little. And it really started with very small pieces, doing a little bit of each of these things, and then gradually increasing. What if I increase my distance from 2 miles to 2.5 miles? What if I increase my swim distance by 50 more meters? So part of the mindset is really about growth into a mindset. I think it's much harder, and we could look at work by James Clear and Atomic Habits. How do you start with your identity first, and then allowing your identity to help you set about your goals versus the other way around? So I want to have an identity as somebody who can do a triathlon. Well, those people do these things versus if I say, well, if I swim and I bike and I run, then I'm going to be able to do a triathlon. And then if I can't do those things, then I feel like I failed. So it was really about building my way up. Let me experiment. Let me see what I can do. How can I get a little bit more uncomfortable, which gets a little bit into more of the mental toughness? How can I push myself just a little bit harder, a little bit further, and start building into that? And then, as can happen a lot in triathlon, many people will say, you do a small one and then you say, well, could I do the next longer distance? Could I make the leap from a sprint to an Olympic distance? Could I make a leap from an Olympic to a half Ironman? Could I go from half Ironman to full? So what I think about with that kind of mindset is it's really about having this identity of who you are or who you want to be, and then building the plan to get there versus the other way around, which is let me build a plan. And as coaches, I think we can sometimes be good at this. We can sometimes be good at saying, what's the position you next want to have? And what are the qualities that are associated with that? And let's work on building those. But sometimes people come to us and say, I need to change X, Y, or Z, or my boss says this person needs to change X, Y, and Z. And therefore, that mindset that's really steeped in a certain kind of identity of who am I isn't necessarily as well formed. And I think as a coach, I've probably struggled more to help people really be successful in those engagements because the motivators maybe are more extrinsic than intrinsic. they're meeting some other criteria of what success looks like versus my own definition of what success looks like. So to me, a big part of the mental game is about being able to see yourself in this future state, looking at what will it take for me to be successful. And you can go into things like types of cognitive rehearsal that athletes use and really thinking through the steps of a race and really picturing themselves in different segments and how you're going to respond in those moments. Some of that kind of mental machination can be helpful. I'd love to do more of that in my coaching work with people, really visualizing, seeing yourself at this meeting, seeing yourself with this type of challenge. What will you do? How will you respond? What will keep your mental game in focus in those tough moments?
Divisioning is that mental rehearsal in your mind and mentally perform before you actually perform. Wow. Can you elaborate with an example or incident for yourself or a client that really showcases this ability?
Yeah, I can do both. If you have the time, the liberty. Yeah. So I actually have a very recent example. So I did a half Ironman race about a month ago. I happened to, at 53 years old, have my personal best time and broke a record.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I broke a record that was 14 years old for me. My last closest race was in 2007. So I was pretty happy to put this effort forward. I have a very good coach, which is another part that I think is really helpful for both athletes and leaders, is someone who helps me really think through the race beforehand. And there are a couple of things that are unique to a race like a triathlon that you can't do in the workplace the same way. But part of it is going and actually looking at the race course, going and looking at the swim start, picturing yourself coming in and out of the water. How do you run into what's called the transition where your bike is and how you get changed out of your wetsuit and get your shoes and your helmet on, and really rehearsing these things before the actual race. Go drive the bike course. Is it hilly? Where are the tough parts? And the run course the same. So that helps, right? You can actually get a visual on that. But the second thing that really helped me was while I was on the bike, I had actually had some hamstring issues the week before, and I was a little nervous that I was going to pull something during this race. And while I was on the bike, even before I got on the bike, I had to really visually see myself on the bike, and I knew what was going to happen. It's a very fast, flat bike course in North Carolina, and I knew I was going to get passed by a lot of cyclists. And when that happens, just like it does in your car, we unconsciously speed up. It just happens. We do it. And I knew that I would be at risk of doing that. And so I had to really rehearse for myself where I wanted my pace to be and how I was going to stick there and just keep telling myself, you're where you need to be. You're where you need to be. You're where you need to be. Because I wanted to have a very successful run. And I knew if I went too hard on the bike, I would not have a successful run. And that strategy actually played out really quite textbook beautifully for me. And I ended up having one of the fastest races I've had. So there's that visualization that can be extremely, extremely helpful. I will tell you about a client I was coaching fairly recently who was having some difficulty. It's not the cognitive rehearsal part, but it is about a mental shift. He's been a very successful executive for well over a decade and a half, but he was in a newer role and he had inherited a number of problems. And there were a lot of people who weren't thinking he was going to be successful. And there was kind of a lot of negative chatter that was going around him in this space. And he was finding himself to actually start believing it a little bit. It was really starting to mess with his own mind about his ability to be successful. And so he reached out to me. We had worked together before and reached out and said, I would like some help. I need to get my mental game together a little bit. So we started a practice where daily he had to do reflective activities to think back on the day, what went well, not just be critical, but to think about what went well and really rehearse and think through the next day and the strategies that he was going to enact. And then every Friday he had to report back to me. And it was amazing how much that activity with a positive focus started helping to highlight for him the advantages that he was bringing from his previous experiences, the insights he was showing his team, the positive feedback pieces he was getting from his team, but he had been ignoring earlier. So his mindset really started to shift. And he had had some very aggressive goals. He actually recognized that the goals, they weren't tenable. And he went to his boss and talked about them and they revised the goals. And then his team actually like overshot and almost reached those initial goals, but really ended up changing the way that his whole mind game was working. So I think that's a great example of how your mindset can really be influenced by your surroundings and what you're telling yourself, both positively and negatively.
Thank you for those examples. Part of the mindset is also, you said it, how we talk to ourselves, tell myself. And I believe the most important story is the one we tell to ourselves about ourselves.
Absolutely. I agree, Simon. It's funny. I heard just about a year ago, a performance coach, a professional who works with professional sports teams, talk about the difference between talking to yourself and listening to yourself, which I thought was a really interesting difference. And when you think about self-talk for athletes, this is something that it's utilized a lot by performance coaches, et cetera, engaging in a narrative of success. So the self-talk is very positively focused. It's continuing to coach and encourage yourself. His point was sometimes when we start the listening to ourselves is when we allow the negative messages to come in and start kind of overtaking some of that positive self-talk. So I really like that whole notion of, you know, moving away from just listening to yourself. So sometimes it's about, in thinking about that client, like reframing, right? He was really starting to listen to himself. What he was telling himself in those moments was a lot around this negative piece. So he had to start reframing. And he recognized he had made some mistakes, took ownership of that, and then started some very disciplined self-talk. So started talking about, what am I doing well every day? What am I doing well? This has become a habit. And also part of it is encouraging others can be a really interesting piece of self-talk. Let me just quickly bring this up because it weaves through the end of one part of my model when we talk about support. But when we encourage others, there is so much power in that because it's very difficult to encourage someone else unless you are in a place of strength yourself, right? So even if you don't feel strong, if you start encouraging someone else, essentially you're sending a message, a cognitive reframe, like, I must be strong if I can encourage someone else, because people who are weak aren't spending their time encouraging other people. In that race, when I was on this run and I was having a good run, but you get to mile 9 of 13 and it can be a slog. It can be pretty painful and tough. And it was a course where they call it an out and back. So you're out, go out, turn around and come back the same way. So you're passing people all the time, right? And I was on my way back in and there were people who were still going out and they have a long way in front of them. They're at mile 4 and I'm at mile 9. And they got a long way to go. And I started cheering and clapping for them and saying, great job, you're doing awesome. And what I found, a couple of things. One is they all perked up. You know, they suddenly had a little more buoyancy in their step, as did the people that were cheering around, like just the spectators. They also cheered more. But I felt stronger. I felt more energy for continuing to go forward. So that encouragement, and it's something that I've been really harnessing and focusing on more with leaders. How are you encouraging others? Where are you bringing gratitude into your work? Are you starting your meetings with gratitude or with an encouragement word for your team? Because it creates a frame of strength.
Yeah, a high five or a pep talk can go a long way at the right moment. Mm-hmm. I really like this concept of self-listening. Mm-hmm. And it's also about recognizing our own thinking. We have so many thoughts that come into our mind. And picking up is like, how do I think or how do I talk to myself? Recognizing that. Any recommendations how to do that so we are more conscious, more aware, more present? And then that helps us reframe the messages that are more empowering. Any tips or recommendations how to catch our own thinking?
That's a great question. That's a really, really great question. And, you know, I will confess, as you know, I'm a psychologist by background. So part of what I tend to think is that for many of us, it can be important, and this is going to sound more therapy than coaching or consulting, but it's important sometimes to recognize when we have negative messages, whose voice does that sound like? If you could give sound to it, would it sound like your own voice? The words that you're using, where have you heard those words before? Do you have history with those words? Is it someone else's voice that's replaying in your head? And we all have experiences in our lives that have been less than favorable. We've had people who've talked to us in ways that maybe are not always favorable. And some of those messages we can internalize. And so recognizing that and acknowledging that can be really important for distinguishing, that's not my voice. That's somebody else's voice. And I don't need to be carrying that voice around anymore. It can be very, very powerful as a tool to really just say, nope, I don't need that voice. But you are right. We still, even if we're able to do that, we have a million thoughts going on. So I think that centering exercises, whether that's a meditative practice, whether it's a religious practice, whether it's even sometimes a very focused conversational practice, somebody that you talk to in a way that allows for your own self-reflection and discovery, whether that's a therapist, whether it's a peer coach, whether it's a friend or a mentor, can be very helpful. I lump those together as if they're all the same thing, and they're not. I mean, meditation or spiritual practice are very specific and self-focused centering exercises. And many, many athletes and many, many leaders that I've seen that are successful leaders have this as some element of their practice, either meditation or a reflective practice, because it can be helpful for clearing out the noise, or at least when the noise comes, allowing it to come and go and getting a little clearer about what your voice really sounds like. It's discipline. It's discipline to do that. It doesn't just happen. So that to me can be a really important one, and probably one of the hardest things to get executives and leaders to do because they don't have time.
A key concept is mental toughness. To endure, it can be hard. It takes discipline. And how do we train and foster mental toughness? And even how do we do that in a business or in a work environment? The ability to withstand adversity and be tough and keep going.
And still thrive. Yeah. In fact, there's really a difference in the definitions between mental toughness and resilience. And without kind of going into a lot of the research that's been done around these, the easiest way to think of it is resilience will help you kind of overcome an adversity and get back to baseline. I think of it as something's happened, you're kind of down a little, and it's going to help you come back to your baseline. Mental toughness will help you thrive in the face of that adversity. So it may not hit you as low, and you're likely to come out even higher as a result. But it is absolutely a discipline to become mentally tough. There's an example I really like of the woman who won the Boston Marathon a few years ago, first American to win in over 30 years, Des Linden. And she attributes her win in, like, her win was in terrible weather conditions. It was 2018. It was like just above 30 degrees and wind gusts like 25 miles an hour and pouring rain. It was awful. Most people don't even want to be outside in that weather, let alone running a marathon in it. But one of the things about Des is she grew up in Southern California and she lives and trains in Michigan. So she trains in all this crazy, terrible weather intentionally to be able to be in adverse conditions so that when the adverse conditions arise, she's not thrown off of her game. She may have to make some adjustments. So that to me is a good kind of endurance athlete example. I think when we talk about the workplace, it's about pushing ourselves outside of our comfort zones. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go do something completely outrageous, but let's say you're working with somebody who is trying to be more influential in key meetings. They want to have a stronger voice. Maybe it's they enroll in an improv class, which is so incredibly uncomfortable. But that experience allows when they're in a meeting and something comes up extemporaneously and they need to say something, they can. And they're not uncomfortable. That adverse situation, it doesn't have that power over them anymore to kind of paralyze them and make them feel like they can't be successful. So it's finding those things where could I push myself a little bit outside of my comfort zone? Maybe I need to be talking less in some meetings. If you're the person who's always taking the conversation, maybe I need to really get skilled in the commercial aspects of our business instead of just in the finance. Maybe I need to actually consider a job in operations that's open that might be really scary because I've never worked in operations before. But if your goal is to be at an executive level, that could be a great way to build your mental toughness. And there's some relationship here with agility too. You know, you become more versatile, but getting ourselves out of our comfort zones, that doesn't mean being more stressed. And that's a big difference. Like, some people are outside of their comfort zones all day long because they're just stressed. Well, stress actually can be a source of comfort. It becomes very familiar to people a lot. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, what are you actively committing to? That's like, oh, can I really do this? I don't know. This is going to be tough. And it's helpful to commit it to somebody else who's going to follow up with you and be like, hey, how's it going on that improv class? You know? So to me, that's where, and as coaches, it's a place where I think we can really help leaders support their mental toughness.
One of the challenges is in sports, there is this underlying assumption that you got to train hard to make it happen. In leadership, you take a leadership training a couple days and then you expect to be a strong leader. I think in leadership, what I often miss is this assumption that you got to train leadership.
Train every day. You got to train
every day. And right. Going back to your, how often do we put ourselves in challenging, uncomfortable situations to train a skill? And I think a good example is public speaking. Take a public speaking class. And I was at Toastmasters for 15 years.
Yeah, training.
Just the fact that every week you practice communication skills in a safe environment. I messed up so many times and people still clap and provide you a positive feedback. Do that in a safe environment where we can practice a skill to learn to be a little bit tougher. That is not happening in leadership.
It doesn't happen. And that's something that I talk about a lot, is like a big part of this model, as I see it, is you got to train, right? It's athletes, endurance athletes don't become endurance athletes by just thinking about these things and saying, well, let me go take a course on how to do a triathlon and read about it online. And then somehow I'll be one. No,
right? It's like you get a promotion and now you're a leader. It's like, okay, let me sign up for the Ironman. And
right. And somehow, somehow by signing up, it's going to magically happen. It's true.
Right.
And one of, I think the mystery around this, I think for a lot of leaders, like, I can't do the same thing every day to train. And okay, yeah, an athlete might be able to run every day to get better, although they don't. They tend to do other things as well, right? Cross train, recovery. But we can help leaders to say, well, you can do something every day. You probably can find an example every single day in your workplace of a place you can practice a Toastmaster skill. What's it going to be this week? What skill could you commit to trying every single day this week, at least once a day?
As simple as giving someone appreciation, listening deeper to another person.
Exactly right. And be intentional about that. Make an intentional effort. It may not always happen exactly as you thought, but if you set that intention, as we know, setting intentions helps us get things done. So again, this is something that even as a coach, I will say for years, I haven't really thought of this. I would work with leaders and we would set these goals for their behaviors and they'd be like, oh, I wasn't in that meeting this week. It got canceled. I didn't have an opportunity. And it's like, we're kind of all off the hook for leadership change because this specific situation didn't emerge to practice in. And instead it's like, well, why are we limiting ourselves to one particular condition under which you're going to practice being a good leader? Like, let's find something every single day that you can be working on. And I encourage coaches to be better at that.
Let's deconstruct your concept. What are the four areas of the endurance leadership?
Yeah, so it is anchoring your mindset, excel in execution, forge discipline, and leverage support. Those are the four areas.
Let's talk about leverage support. Mm-hmm. How important is the team, even in an individual sport like triathlon or skiing?
Yeah, I personally believe that we are always part of a team. Even in solo sports, I would hazard a guess that no one crossed the Ironman World Championship in Kona, Hawaii, and said, you know what? I got here all by myself. No one did. It doesn't happen. And while the model, as I've created it, is intended to be kind of in the leading self, leading others, leading the organization framework, this sits squarely in the leading self. We know that leadership is a team sport. You're always interacting with other people. And I've seen through my experience, I perform at my best when I have other people actively engaged in my success. One of them is my spouse. So without his support, whether it's feedback on how much rest I'm getting or being my collaborator on meals, whether it's what we affectionately call being the Sherpa when you're at a race and carrying your stuff and making sure you get to the race course on time and then they take the car so you don't have to deal with it. All of these things that are really important. It's much easier to see the team context in a work environment, but show me an endurance athlete who's been successful and I will surely say you did not get here on your own.
Who is your support team when you do a triathlon? What are the functions and supporting roles for you?
Well, I always have a coach. So that's my first piece is I have a coach. I have a great coach and I really rely on her. She knows that to me, there's some really important qualities around coaches that come from the endurance athlete world that I think also apply in coaching and leadership as well. And one of them is, you know, they're tough solely for the sake of making the athlete better. And I will say my coach is that type of person. She's not tough in this like demanding way, but she will push me to work harder on things. She also will push me if I'm not doing things like taking rest and recovery appropriately, because that is so critical to good training. So that is one. My husband, Dave, is absolutely another. Even at times when we've lived on different parts of the world, his continual support is always there. And as I've mentioned, for me, being part of something that's bigger has mattered a lot. So I invariably find a nonprofit that I'm going to raise money for my races. And then I'm usually engaged with them in some way. they call it kind of fundraising to raise money. And I've gotten tremendous support from those organizations. I also like to do races with other people because there's accountability, there's camaraderie, there's, are we going to show up on a cold and rainy Sunday morning to go for a run? Well, I'm going to be there. So I'm hoping you're going to be there. You know, you create that kind of accountability. In the work environment, I think it's easy to assume that you have the same kind of support system because there's people around, but I think it needs to be really intentional because there are people, they support you, but they are not a supporter. Do you know what I mean? They're passively perfectly happy to see you be successful in your leadership. And then there's other people that you can engage that want to be actively involved, whether that's a specific mentor, maybe it's a boss, maybe it's an HR partner, maybe it's a peer, maybe it's an outside coach. Those teams to me are really important for endurance success in leadership.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for today's conversation.
Simon.
Where can we find out more about your resources and your expertise on endurance leadership?
You can visit me at www.lumos.com for more information about me and all the things I'm up to. And that's LLUMOS.com. You can also find my email there, which is Anne@lumos.com, and reach out to me anytime. I will be glad to talk more with you about this whole concept of endurance leadership and how you might use it to benefit your leadership.
Wonderful. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you and have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. Great being with you. Talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.